Hello and welcome to Geek Culture Online. I'm your host, Patrick Bolin, and today we're continuing our trek through the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Today we're doing Captain America Civil War. Yes, the third one in that trilogy.
Winter Soldier was 2.
The 13th overall.
13th overall, number 3 in the Captain America trilogy. And I'm here with my favorite co-host, Ethan and Larry.
Hello.
Now, this one...
And this film could also have been titled Avengers Civil War.
Yeah.
But we'll get into that.
That's really what it is.
Yes, it's the nickname on the internet is Avengers 2.5.
That would be appropriate.
Yes. Now, just like all the other ones, pretty much with like the Iron Man and Captain Marvel and Thor's, it opens up with a flashback sequence.
Yes.
This flashback sequence takes place in 1991.
Right, December 1991.
Yes, December 16th, 1991.
December 16th, yeah.
Yes. Now, this is very interesting because we look back at all the other movies that have had flashback sequences. Okay, right. There was the one in Ant-Man, which took place in 87, and then they talked about it when that was in 89. So there was two pieces.
Right. The 89 was the beginning of the movie, and the 87 with the missile was in the middle.
So there was that place that took place in the late 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Captain America, the first Avenger, takes place in the 40s.
Right.
Right.
And now we have the sequence here taking place in 91, and we might as well reference what we know a little bit about Captain Marvel, which takes place in the middle of the 90s. So Marvel, the cinematic universe, is kind of going through there and kind of filling in
blanks, right?
Yes.
It's like a big puzzle,
right.
like a 500-piece puzzle, and they're slowly building the upper right corner to the upper left corner, all the corners as much as they can.
And this is a very significant thing that happens in 90. Oh, and then don't forget the flashback sequence in Iron Man 3 that takes place in 1999 because he meets... during the New Year's Eve party.
Yes, the scientist.
Right, New Year for Y2K.
Yes.
When he's in, Geneva?
Geneva,
So
this one is very significant because we see a car accident.
Right, we see it, right, exactly.
Right.
Right. Nasty.
But before we see the accident, it starts off where we see Bucky, Winter Soldier, is being given his...
like marching orders.
He's undergoing, like, he's giving his commands to go into action, where he's basically, you know, he's under mind control or some type of brainwashing or hypnosis.
And the words they use is longing, rusted, 17, daybreak, furnace, 9, benign, homecoming, 1, and freight car.
Right, and those are those like trigger him. They put the trigger words.
Right,
the trigger words that like kind of put him back in that trance that he can be controlled.
Yes.
Right. So the Winter Soldier.
He's not going to question anything.
Correct.
He's going to put into this trance, given his orders, he's going to do them and come back.
Correct.
Well, he even says after he's given the last word, he says something like ready to receive or ready for command or something like that.
Yes. Yes, and so...
Right. And so then after that, we see him on the motorcycle, and then he takes out the car. The car crashes into a tree. He gets something out of the trunk, and then we come back to that later.
Yes.
Right.
And so we come back to the modern times, which was in Lagos.
Lagos, Nigeria.
Lagos, Nigeria.
Right. Big city in Nigeria, right. Exactly.
And
Captain Marvel, I'm sorry, Captain America's sitting there, Black Widow's there, and Scarlet Witch is right. They're all in
Falcon.
Falcon, but he's
and
kind of
Falcon,
in the wings.
Right.
Ah, he's in the wings, get it? Yeah. Bad joke. Anyway, right, they're all in Legos.
He's perched on the roof.
Oh, God. Okay, let's keep moving.
Okay.
So they're in Lagos, Nigeria.
And Falcon has Red Wing with him, too.
Yes.
Right, which is the little drone thing.
Yeah, because in the comic books, he had several birds as companions, and one of them was this big red hawk, which he called Red Wing.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Right,
it was an actual bird, though.
Yeah,
not a drone.
So the drone in the movies is somewhat of an homage to that bird from the comic.
So,
which makes much more sense. I feel like that's brilliant.
Right. So again, so they're doing surveillance on this Hydra agent. Am I right? Help me out. This guy they're expecting to show up.
Well, they figure that they're watching these agents, and they're figuring something is going wrong because all of a sudden they see this like trash truck.
Yeah, big garbage truck. Yeah,
and they're like, "Whoa, that seems out of place."
Right,
and they're like, "We need to investigate that."
But they're looking for that Hydra agent Rumlow, who goes by Crossbones.
Yes,
but we know that they're, and the reason we know that they're looking for him, or they know that he's there, it's because Captain America and Falcon make some references to him being there, and that he's, you know, not going to be pleased to see them, basically.
Right.
Exactly.
He does say that, yeah.
And where Crossbones came from was from the previous Captain America film, Winter Soldier. Winter Soldier. Yeah, it was Winter Soldier.
Winter Soldier, yeah.
Yeah, yes, because that's where he got scarred up.
Because
the collapse of S.H.I.E.L.D. and he got caught in the building with the explosion, and they pulled him out, still alive, and he's all scarred up.
Gotcha.
He's got burn scars all over his body and face.
Yes, and so they're tracking him down. The garbage truck actually explodes and takes out.
Remember it's going at an accelerated rate towards CDC compound or drug compound or whatever, a United Nations compound, and there's bollards, but of course the security guard sees the garbage truck accelerating, and then you see the door open and the driver rolls out.
Yes.
So that's not a good sign if the driver bails out on you and the vehicle's heading at you.
And Falcon uses Red Wing to scan the truck, so they know that it's heavily armed and there's stuff in it that shouldn't be. So right off that tips them off.
They know that something's going down. So basically it crashes like the entranceway with a little trellis over the entrance, and explodes and it destroys
everything out.
Right. And so then all of a sudden these other troopers come in and start shooting up the place basically.
Yes,
like these like Hydra agents basically.
Exactly. And that's where Captain
I was gonna say then Captain America goes into action and then he says something because they're speaking over walkie-talkies or headphones or whatever. He says he counts seven, that there's seven of them in there. And then right after that, we see Falcon go into action, takes out two of them. He says, "I count five."
Yes.
And then they slowly start counting down as they're taking guys out.
Yes, and so there's whittling going through these heavily armed
troops. We're just shooting everywhere. They're just making...
And they're making mincemeat. The Avengers is just like plowing through them. No problems at all. Yeah, Black Widow is just mowing through them.
Right. At the same time, I think that's the distraction because, what's it, Crossbone?
Right.
He's trying to steal
this formula
/ like biological weapon
that's
stored in this like refrigerated section that nobody's supposed to go into. And he's just... busting down the security in the building,
he's plowing through,
and he gets it. I mean, he gets the weapon. What do you call it? The biological, where you know the biohazard it is.
Yes.
And you know Captain America's in there. It's a pretty kinetic and fight scene.
They can't let him get away with it. And so, but you know he and so they basically Scarlet Witch. They pump a whole bunch of poisonous gas into the building to knock everybody out or kill everybody. And the Scarlet Witch pulls all that junk out and fires it up into the sky.
Right.
So she's learning her powers really well.
Right. And right away in that early scene, you're seeing how kind of important Scarlet Witch is with her superpowers, that she can do. She can save a lot of lives and she can do a lot of damage too.
Yeah. So apparently she's gone through a lot of training because as she's observing things, Captain America and Black Widow are going like, "Oh yeah, but don't forget this, be aware of this." And she goes like, "How are you, basically on pins and needles all the time?" She goes, "Well, it's part of the job," type of thing. And so she's gone through a lot of training apparently at the Avengers compound, but she's like now on the job training.
Oh yeah.
And
yeah.
So they get to the point where Crossbones and Captain America are
face to face, right?
And
they're going at each other, right?
Yes, and they.
But remember, Crossbones, he doesn't have the biohazard. He has the weapon. He hands it off to one of his like henchmen, and they split up.
Right.
And so they're chasing. So Black Widow's going one way, mm-hmm. Captain America's another. So and they know they're going to be split. So they're literally
and Falcons. You know, Falcons right. got one group. Right. Black Widow's got the other group, and
right.
Captain America's after Crossbones.
Right. So they're literally gone in three different directions, and that's kind of how you think you want to kind of keep people.
Yeah, the shell game type.
Right.
Of thing.
Basically. Right. Exactly. And so they're running through the city. They're running over. Vegetable stalls, fruits. I mean, it's pandemonium.
And but they manage to whittle it down to finally somebody that does have it.
Right.
And the trouble is that it gets to the point where it's it looks like it's going to break, and then it's
right.
going to poison everybody. That's in, they're in a very crowded area.
Right. Right. It's and a bustling
so,
city.
Right.
And so Crossbones gets it.
Right.
And he's going to bust it right there and then. So it's like an audible. It was a call. You know, Scarlet Witch goes like, forgot this part. He's going to, you know, he can't just bust it. He's got to be able to spread it out. So he's armed to the teeth. Apparently he's got a dead man's switch with an explosive vest.
Yeah,
on
like
him.
A suicide
so
vest then. Yeah.
So right. he pulls the trigger on this. Scarlet Witch, instead of waiting for orders, grabs him and pulls him up through the sky, except it goes. The vest goes off.
Right, detonates.
Detonates, but she doesn't get him clear of the building in time and takes out several floors of an upper building.
Right, so she saved Captain America
and
some
everybody,
of the people.
Everybody on the ground.
Right, but because the blast was so nasty and massive
close to it
took out a large chunk of this office building behind, right, and you can.
Another key point, though, there is that Crossbones distracts Cap by talking about Bucky.
Yes.
Says to him, he says, he remembered you.
Yeah.
And Cap says, who? And he says, your buddy, Bucky. He remembered you, and he wanted to pass on a message to you. And he says something. What I forget. What does he say? I forgot to write it down. But he says something like. So about when you it's time to go, you have to go or something like that.
So then
that's when he sets off the explosive. So Cap is a little bit off his game, and that's what contributes to the explosion, which then Scarlet Witch has to contain with her power.
Right, because if Scarlet Witch didn't act on impulse, Captain America would most likely have been dead,
and the biological agent would have been spread
right.
throughout the crowd. So it's just from his being hesitant, he could have again. We're playing Monday morning quarterback. He may have been able to like stop him from pulling the trigger, which then so it's just that little hesitant going like hearing from about Bucky, and is what really triggered this whole thing. You know, just so
right.
the explosion goes off. They find out later that there was a whole bunch of Wakandans on those upper floors, which were killed
right.
from the
11
explosion.
Wakandans,
right?
Yes.
That died because of
the explosion
of this explosion, which Scarlet Witch takes as it's her fault. I mean, she really internalizes it.
Yes, and
she blames herself.
Yeah, and Captain America blames himself too, because if he didn't hesitate, then things may have been different.
Right.
But because of this, this is causing an international incident.
Yes.
So they bring
but Captain America does also try to console Wanda a little bit, and he says, this job is tough. Sometimes, when you're trying to save people, saving people means saving. That.
You can't save everyone.
Fewer people die, but you can't save everyone, basically.
Which is interesting.
And that he says, who knows, if we weren't there, more people might have died.
Right. And so, but as what Patrick's saying is, the post-mortem, not to be crude, is 11 Wakandans are dead in Lagos, Nigeria, and
mm-hmm. they're blaming
the Avengers for this. And so now there's this international outcry that, maybe the Avengers aren't all goody two shoes. Maybe they're causing more problems than they're worth.
And the government sends in the Secretary of
State,
who right. is now
William Hurt.
It's William Hurt, which is Governor
Ross.
Thunderbolt Ross.
Right. From,
yes.
from the Hulk.
Right, yes.
Right. And Thunderbolt Ross or Thaddeus Ross. Yes.
Yes. And so they go in there and they're like, okay, well, this is the third time in the public's eye you screwed up.
Right.
Even though they say New York.
He says
it's four. It's four because it's New York from Avengers, DC from Winter Soldier, Right. Sokovia from Ultron, and then
Legos
from this film.
Right. So people have had it, basically, at this point.
Yeah, well, there's 117 countries are wanting...
Approximately.
Right. I wrote it.
117.
Right. Are we including Wakanda? Ah!
Well...
118.
Well, no, it was 117. So I think it was they were part of that.
That's fine.
So they're saying they want a little more control. They want to have a say in all this because let's put it this way: you have all these superpowers which are labeling everything around you, and you don't have a say in it.
Right. And they're affecting.
Right. And like Ross gives an example. He says to Captain America, he said, "Well, do you know where Thor and Banner are right now?"
Right. He actually.
If I lost 230 megaton nuclear missiles, I'd have to answer for it.
Right, and it's
basically
actually,
comparing their level of power to a nuclear warhead.
It's a very good analogy, though. I mean, we've seen what Hulk does, we've seen what Thor can do.
Well, yeah, because don't forget what Bruce Banner said. He says, "I broke Harlem."
Right. Exactly.
So he's got a point where yes, I mean, how can you put this on your insurance policy?
You don't.
Yeah,
because
Thor destroys your car, is that an act of God?
An act of God in Asgard. Geico. Anyway,
but it's just like
what would happen with the Sokovia Accords is there would be this oversight body that the Avengers would be accountable to, and that oversight group, whoever it is, some part of the United Nations.
Yes.
Would determine whether or not the Avengers would be mobilized
or acted on a situation or not, tell them what they can or not do. And this is kind of part of the original comic book storyline, which was that all mutants and all superheroes were to be registered. So anybody with a secret identity, the government would know your secret identity. You had to reveal yourself to them, and then you would be accountable for everything that you do. And that's kind of like what the Sokovia Accord is doing, is that making everybody that's part of a superpower or something accountable for their actions.
But right away, Captain America is not happy. I mean, he's bristling against this. I mean, he just does. He doesn't like it from head to toe.
Well, you're giving up your freedom to
act on a situation
instead of saying like, "Oh my God, a building's falling down." Well, I have to ask permission first.
Without delay. That's the whole point. Because again, when those crazy space aliens are coming out of the wormhole in New York City,
you can't debate it.
You're not going to call Vienna and say, "Well, we should have a meeting," when New York is crumbling and burning, right?
Yes.
But that's Captain America's angle.
But before they discuss it, the Secretary Ross tells them there's going to be the signing in Vienna. They need to decide before then.
Right.
And they say, "Well, what happens if we don't like our decision?" And then he said, "Then I suggest you retire."
Right.
Yeah, so basically, it's basically a take it or leave it proposition. They either go along with it or they're considered enemies of state, basically.
Right. Now, from them. Oh, I was going to make a point, and all of a sudden I lost it.
We know you lost it a long time ago,
Patrick.
Yeah,
I did.
So then they begin discussing it. Tony is open to it. He thinks it's maybe not a bad idea, but like you said, Captain America is completely against it.
Right.
And he says, and Tony says, "Well, when I saw what damage my weapons were doing, I got out of the weapon business."
Right.
And Captain America said, "Yes, but that was the choice that you made. They're taking away our choice." He said, "What happens if they want to send us in when we don't want to go, or we want to go and they don't want to send us in? What do we do then?"
Right.
Exactly.
All the hypothetical scenarios. And that's a good way to look at it.
Maybe Ross is going along with this is because it's more of not a political move, but more of a PR move. He's doing this to calm everybody down and saying like, "Okay, fine, we'll do this to point." And then I think Tony does say this is like, "Yeah, let's go ahead and sign this, and then we'll amend this later on."
Right, that's mentioned.
Right,
but. Even that Captain America is still not. He's like no deal. I mean, and you have to see the point. I understand his point.
Because it's just like if I have a superpower and something's happening, I don't want to have to go, "May I?"
Right. You just use it, right? Yeah, because that's what they've always done.
Yeah. I mean, it's just...
Like Larry said, if the aliens are coming through the wormhole, you don't have time to go ask permission. Yeah. You have to act immediately.
Yes, right? So you have to do what you have to do at the time. It's just like firemen don't ask permission to, like, you know, to blare their sirens and go. They're expected to do that.
Right.
But they also don't ask permission to knock your door down if they have to, or bust your windows out, because they do what they have to contain the fire and to save lives.
Boom. So therefore, you know, they're almost making this almost another service.
It's government bureaucracy at its worst is what it boils down to.
Yes.
But yeah, again, this is the plot line. You know, this is that's Captain America versus like, basically Tony Stark versus Iron Man.
Two sides of the same coin.
Right.
Right, and in a way, it's kind of, for particularly with the Captain America character, it's somewhat of a continuation of the thread from the story in Winter Soldier, where he's opposed to the idea of the government coming in and controlling things or making decisions about things.
Right.
And of course, he has the background with him having fought in World War II and, you know, fighting against, you know, fascist dictatorship. He sees the danger that is inherent in that type of thinking by the government.
Right. And he's slippery slope.
It's a very slippery slope, because you give up one thing, right, then it opens the door to be able to give up other things.
I will say this: I saw this movie again recently, but I've seen it before a couple times. And Winter Soldier is the true political thriller of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. This is much more politics light. I mean, I don't even view it as much a very political movie. Yes, there's this choice. I think the Civil War part overshadows this whole government conspiracy thing, in my opinion.
It is
a component, like you said. It's kind of like it's kind of a continuation of Winter Soldier, but I think that's a weak plot line.
But see, if everybody agreed and signed this, then their hands would have been completely tied with Infinity War.
Correct.
And so they couldn't have reacted.
Of course. No. I agree. I'm on Captain America's side. Absolutely.
I'm on Cap's side too.
Yeah, I'm on Captain America's side.
Absolutely. Same here.
Right. I mean,
all three of us are.
These are people.
And immediately you see that Cap and Falcon are on the same side.
Right.
Rhodey is kind of on the same side as Tony, is being open to this. And interestingly enough, Vision is as well, because he's saying that, you know,
mathematically.
He mentions that we've seen this exponential growth in superpowered humans, but we've seen a similar growth in, you know, cataclysmic events that they have to fight against.
Right.
Is one related to the other, basically.
Yes, one's causing the other.
Right.
Well,
it's a good argument, but again, I keep going back to Captain America. But of course, you're having the factions line up, you know. And again, you said this before, Ethan, in one of our previous podcasts, is that you can see the tension in what previous movie was.
In Ultron. In Age of Ultron.
Between Tony Stark, between Iron Man and Captain America, already kind of bubbling up and brewing. So
and don't
to speak.
Forget, even the first Avengers, when you know they were going at each other, and he says, hey, "What are you without the suit?"
Right.
And he goes, philanthropist, billionaire,
playboy,
playboy, billionaire, philanthropist,
yes,
right.
Genius,
right.
Yes, and so then he says, like, you know, yeah, and so. Even then, they had, you know, and their biggest argument of all is this, like, he says, well, I'm going to throw myself down on barbed wire and let my other team climb over me. And he says, I would have just cut the wire.
Right. So again, there's snippets of this. One other
scene that we skipped over. So before Secretary Ross arrives at the Avengers headquarters, Tony is at an appearance at MIT, after the appearance is over, he meets this woman, played by Alfre Woodard, and she talks about her son and how her son was killed by Tony, and then Tony tells them about her son as he's kind of building a case for why they should go along with the Sokovia Accord. Her son was killed in Sokovia. He was there doing some volunteer work. He was this straight-A student about to start his career as an investment banker and yada yada, and then he lost his life because he was at Sokovia and a building fell on him. So
right.
And, that's one little additional piece which kind of influences Tony's thinking and why he wants to support the Sokovia Accords.
And right. Because he's using, interestingly enough, he's using technology, which he's calling BARF, which is binary augmented reality fragmentation or something.
I think so.
Which is very interesting that because in some snuck out pictures from the set on Endgame, people are wearing that same type of device on their wrists.
So the right. BARF technology,
and that's the scene where Tony flashes back to talking to his parents right before they
leave for the airport in the car.
Die right. In 1991.
Right. He's wearing a Mr. Softy ice cream T-shirt. Mm-hmm. Tony Stark
right.
is the young Tony Stark, or the young.
And which is interesting. They go like, and he says, "Well, I was with, you know." He says, "What were you doing? Why aren't you studying?" He says, "Well, I was somebody." And his father says, "Okay, what's her name?" He goes, "Candace." So it's just that, you know, there's another girl from his past that they could be bringing up somewhere else.
Right. But right, so that's the right. That's the flashback to 91, and kind of not in the middle of the movie, but somewhere within the movie.
It was hours before the accident happened, because because Tony right. is having this big argument with his parents, and he says this is how it should have ended.
Right. Right. And he's
right.
And
he's, because he tells his father that he loves him.
Right.
Yeah, which he never got to do.
He's saying that's what should have happened, but not really.
Yeah, right. So he's got this guilt from them dying.
From 1991.
91 that he's carrying. He's mm-hmm. having guilty. He's feeling guilty about him building all these weapons of mass destruction. Now he's feeling guilty that the suit that he built to protect the world isn't protecting people.
Right, it's killing MIT graduates.
Yeah, so he's just,
which is not
yeah.
what anybody would be dreaming of doing.
Yeah, right. so he's you know, he's carrying all his actions from all these movies are from right. his guilt, or his like, what should have, you know, what I should have done, would have done, whatever. It's just that, you know, that, you know, building Ultron, building right. you know, just the suit to begin with, all just, it just, all of this is
right. It's like he's in this underwater submarine, and the pressure is just like
building on
it's like crushing him almost.
Well, yeah, because he couldn't sleep in Iron Man 3. He had all these guilt. Now here's another layer of guilt that's put on him, right. and he takes it out on Cap.
Right, right, and he says, "Look, you know, we need to surrender." In essence, he's saying we need to surrender our powers to somebody else.
He wants somebody else to make the decision for him, because I think what he's thinking is like, "Well, all my decisions have been wrong up to this point."
Right, they've been extremely fatal to other people, almost to me as well.
Yeah, so he's like, "Well, I got to let somebody else call the shots for once."
Right, for at least for the time being,
and so. They can't make a decision up, and they go to Vienna,
where the UN headquarters,
right.
where they're signing the Sokovia Accords.
But before they go to Vienna, Cap gets a text message that says she's gone in her sleep.
Right.
And then we see a funeral in London. It's a funeral for Peggy Carter, Agent right. Carter. And that's a pivotal scene to me as well, because during the ceremony, during the funeral, Sharon Carter, her niece, gets up to speak, who was the S.H.I.E.L.D. agent that we saw in Winter Soldier that was living by Steve's apartment.
Agent 13?
Yes.
Right, yeah.
Agent 13, right. But one of the things she talks about in her speech is how one of the things she learned from her aunt was that, you know, when people tell you to do things that you don't agree with, don't do them, basically. And that just kind of solidifies, to me, It's significant, because they cut then to a close up of Steve listening to it, and in my mind he's hearing Peggy talking to him through that speech, and kind of it reinforces his belief that, you know, the Accords are wrong, so he's not going to go along with it.
And you know, I think it convinces him entirely, because now here's another agent.
Correct.
That or another soldier that believes what he believes in.
Right.
So it's just like, you know, he's hearing more and more people saying the same thing. So he's like, right. I am right about this.
Right, because he's the military right. man. He's the one who's, you know, keeping order, where I think in a way, in Ultron and other movies, he's always kind of seen Tony Stark as, you know, disordering things or creating a little chaos.
And don't forget, the reason why he wanted to go into the army to begin with is because I hate bullies.
Right.
So he's right. The UN itself is bullying them into doing this.
Yeah.
So it
rubs him the wrong way in every way possible.
Yes.
For Steve Rogers. And again, you can't blame him for his history.
And his character is his character, and it's unwavering.
Right. Right. For Captain America, the world is very black and white. And there's nothing wrong with that. Because a good military person, mm-hmm. male or female, understands when you're in the military, most of your situations are going to be black or white. He or she's the enemy. You're the good guy. You fight them. You kill them. And that's the end of it. And you go home and you go to sleep and eat your meals, you know. So whereas Tony Stark has always had this conflict, like you said. He has this conflicts.
He's reacting to a situation instead of acting on it.
Yeah.
Also, I would also say that the character of Captain America, not only are things black and white, but he has more of a moral compass, perhaps, than Tony does.
Right.
Tony is more about himself.
Right.
And, you know, and grandiose ideas, where Cap is very much guided by what's right and what's wrong.
Right.
Yeah.
And has a very clear idea of what that is.
Right. And Tony Stark is
unwavering.
Right. Captain America looks outward. You could say Tony Stark looks more inward. And again, not 100%, but I'm saying that's a very good crude way of putting it. So right. So the funeral scene is crucial for obviously.
Well, because he didn't know that they were related. You know, because he didn't know that Sharon and Peggy were related at all.
Right. But again, this is you know, obviously if somebody significant
there
to Captain
there
Rogers
was a spark there, and it,
well, there was yes,
and it's still there.
It's still there, and I can't blame him for it. Anyway, but right, so the funeral scene is important to kind of, like you said, Ethan, solidify, if it wasn't solid already, Captain America's opinion of I'm not doing this, and then of course mm-hmm. that's London. And then remember, I forget who's talking about Black Widow saying, "Well, I don't know if Tony's going to show up." And you know, that's kind of. I'm sorry, I don't know if Steve is going to show up. You know, if Captain America is going to show up, and that's kind of the wild card. Because pretty much most of the other people have shown up. The known Avengers show up to Vienna to sign the accords, but Captain America is the standout that's missing.
Right, and they're all there.
And she gives him an opportunity to. To sign the accord, mm-hmm. and he says, "You know, I'm not going to sign this."
Right.
You know, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. He's like,
he's steadfast. He's steadfast in that point. So.
Yeah. So they go there. They go to the Vienna, and we meet another set of characters. They're introduced for the very first time.
Right.
Earlier in the film, we see when they talk about the explosion in Lagos and how there were citizens of Wakanda there. We see a brief clip of King T'Chaka,
mm-hmm.
who is there at Vienna, but also it's our first time seeing his son, T'Challa.
Right,
who is, of course,
Black Panther.
And, of course, T'Challa is...
Black Panther.
Going to be
Black Panther.
Well, exactly. Going to be, right.
Yeah, but because his father is Black Panther up to this point.
Correct, exactly. Correct. So, and his father is the king of Wakanda, also their diplomat to the United Nations, mm-hmm. and that's why he's in Vienna as well. And King T'Chaka is talking to Black Widow.
Mm-hmm.
Extensively, and he's having a good conversation with her.
Yeah, everybody's kind of like getting on the same page and all this.
More or less. But Captain America.
Yeah, except for Captain America, and everybody's like
agreeing. Captain America and Falcon and Wanda are the ones that who are not on board.
Right. They're the most They're the outspoken. Known. They're the most outspoken holdouts, and then, of course, there's other holdouts as well. But
when Black Widow speaks to Steve at the funeral, and they talk about who signed it and who hasn't, he asks, "What about Clint?" Meaning Hawkeye, and she says, "Oh, Clint says he's retired."
Right. Which is an interesting point because he apparently plays a very big role in Endgame.
But but first we see Clint still in this film.
Yes, we do.
No, absolutely, right, but. Ultron is where Ultron's where we go to his house, right? Right.
Yes.
That was an Ultron where we actually see his homestead.
But in this film, when she's talking about the Accords, he says, "Well, what about Clint? You know, did Clint sign the Accords?" And she says, "Well, Clint says he's retired.
Right.
So he's out of the equation at this point.
Right.
He's neither,
or at least that's what he wants the authorities to think.
Right, because he's not refusing to sign it, but he doesn't have to sign it because he's retired. Because that was the option that Ross gave. Either you sign it or you're retired.
So Hawkeye, in essence, said, I'm retired, which, whether that's true or not, but that's his official statement. Let's say that, for now.
Right. So while they're there in Vienna, and King T'Chaka gets up to speak, he's starting to talk, and then T'Challa notices Black Widow notices the band.
T'Challa notices what she's seeing.
Right. He looks over and he goes, "Oh, there's this like delivery van or somebody's like holding up."
They're running from the van.
Right, right. And so also he looks at his father and he like runs towards his father who's speaking. And then,
at the same time, the explosion goes off. Right. He tries to cover him.
He tries to cover his father, but he doesn't get close enough, and he and T'Challa gets blown back.
Yeah, like, the whole entire floor is wiped out,
right,
basically.
Almost. Well, Black Widow survives. Yeah, people survive. And
T'Challa survives.
Yes. T'Challa survives, but he's blown back by the blast, and unfortunately, it's really kind of the center of the blast is like right behind his father. So his father's laying there in shards of glass and what have you, and is gone. He's dead in Vienna, and then right away
we're being the official story is that the explosion was caused by Winter Soldier.
Right. Yes. That's in the press.
He's the prime suspect.
Right, and that's in the press.
Because they have caught footage of him.
Right, that they believe is the Winter Soldier.
And at this point, I thought, like, oh, he's brainwashed again. I thought it was him. And so I'm like, well, he's brainwashed. He can't be held responsible, but he's being blamed for this. Right. And everybody else was thinking the same thing.
Right, right. That was my line of thinking. And so, of course, T'Challa wants to avenge his father's death, as most people would want to do, because that's also his custom.
He thinks Winter Soldier did it. He thinks Bucky did it.
Right. So,
because he even tells Black Widow, so don't worry, I'll kill him myself.
Right, right, right. So he's on a vengeance. He's on a tear. Right.
Right. And then meanwhile, Sharon Carter, Agent 13, kind of gets Captain America and Sam up to speed as to what's going on, and basically lets them know they're going to be looking for Bucky. So if he's going to do anything, he better get moving right away.
Right.
Yeah. Because he knows that he's loyal to Bucky.
Right. And she says, "Look, I can get in trouble for telling you this." And so then Captain America's mission is now I got to find Bucky before other people find Bucky and put him in the clink or kill him.
Yes.
And so that's kind of his main focus now.
And they
to rescue him, so to speak, to bring him back out of the cold, so to speak.
And then we go back to the Avengers headquarters, because Black Widow's there and Tony's there and Ross is there, and they're going like, "So you screwed this up, didn't you?" And he says, "You give me," and he says, "We're going to go and hunt him down." And Tony's like, "Give me 72 hours." And Ross goes, "You got 36."
Right.
So it's just like Tony's got 36 hours to hunt him down, convince him to come in, and all this stuff.
Right.
And so,
From New York City, basically.
Yeah.
Right. But so then we see Bucky in Bucharest, Hungary.
Right.
And we see him walking in the street. He's looking at some fruit. And this guy's at a newsstand, is kind of looking at him, and then you see the guy get on the phone, and he runs away.
Right.
Bucky walks over and looks at the newspaper.
It's right.
And it's on the front page that he's the suspect in the bombing.
Right.
And then we see Captain America in Bucky's apartment, waiting for him to get there.
And then Bucky shows up, and basically they say, like, "Well, are we going to fight it out?" And he's like, "No, we're here to talk." And he's like, "I'm not that person."
Right, 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 right. Bucky's proclaiming his innocence. Meanwhile, Captain America is in his ear from Falcon saying there's German secret police coming. They're on the roof. He's literally giving like a countdown when they're about to invade the apartment.
And they're still arguing with each other. They're just they're discussing things, even though that they're about to get mowed down.
Right, exactly. So
right, but one of the things that's really key is that once Captain America sees Bucky, he says, "Who am I?" And Bucky says, "Oh, you're Steve." He said, "I read about you in the museum," and then Steve says, "Look, I know you might be nervous or whatever." He says, "But I can tell that you're lying." So basically, Bucky is telling him like he doesn't remember Steve. He only knows about him from seeing him in the Smithsonian, but Steve doesn't buy it. He believes that he's still Bucky because, of course, remember at the end of Winter Soldier, Bucky saves him and pulls him out of the Potomac.
Right.
And he even says to him, he says, why did you pull me out of the river then? He said, I don't know.
Right.
And then the soldiers break windows and they're throwing explosives and
gas everything
and Captain America uses a shield to muffle one of the explosions, which I thought was a brilliant thing to do.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So Captain America is kind of he's trying not to kill these secret police guys. He's these
disarming them and taking them out.
Right.
So they get this beautiful sequence of the staircase.
Right. But Bucky is kind of Bucky's mauling him basically because he's going after him.
But he's not. No. Neither of them are killing them. They're just making sure they're staying down.
True. True.
But you know I remember when I first saw the film and then when I've rewatched it. That scene always makes me feel a little weird because it just seems odd to see Captain America fighting against,
military,
the military or the secret. I think they're supposed to be German police or whatever.
Right, but, secret police.
He's fighting against the good guys, and it just doesn't seem right. You know,
no, it doesn't.
Seems a little bit out of character because don't you think he, if he was like. He'd be reasoning with him. He says, "Like, no, look, let me talk to him. Let's not do this."
Right. But again,
he's like, "Nope." My friend overrides, everything else.
And right, so, it does. I mean, his friendship that he has this long
stand. Because he's a man out of time. So, and Bucky is from his time period. Is that the only thing left?
Because especially Peggy's because gone. Peggy's dead, right?
Yeah.
Peggy's dead in this earlier.
Right.
This is his only link left.
Right, because he even says at Peggy's funeral, he says he mentions to Natasha, he says, when I was pulled out of the ice, I figured, nobody was left that I knew, and then I was pleased to find out that Peggy was still around. So, I think that reinforces what you're saying, that, his loyalty to Bucky has a lot to do with the fact that Bucky's one of the only people who truly knows him from back then.
Yes, and that's the only thing left of any reference. The only tie left from the time period that he came from.
Right.
And if Bucky's gone, what does he have left? He doesn't have anything.
Right. I mean, as they've touched on, and I understand this, because, I've moved around to some degree in my life, and you always, when you feel like a stranger in a strange land, it affects you. It really does. You kind of latch on to,
whatever
a person. Right. Whatever that, it might be nostalgic, it might be even corny or cheesy,
mm-hmm.
but you latch on to these things because that comforts you.
Mm-hmm.
That's like a warm blanket. It could just be, it could be emotional. It could be psychological. Again, obviously they have a long-standing friendship and past. And I think even in previous movies, when he's fighting Bucky, you could see he doesn't really want to fight him. I mean, he has to, but he just doesn't want to. And he's conflicted.
Well,
he's conflicted.
It's his childhood best friend too.
Right.
That's the other thing.
They grew up together.
Right.
Both grew up together.
Yeah, right. So again, he doesn't want to do. Like I said, so you're right, Ethan. I felt strange watching that scene as well. I was confused. This shows you that Bucky is the top dog. I mean, since Peggy's gone, right? Bucky is the last link to his personality, the real Steve Rogers, right? So
exactly.
Because even the Howling Commandos are gone by this point.
They're pretty much gone, right?
Yeah.
It's Bucky and him, and that's it. So
yeah, because both of them are technically 100 years old.
Right, but they both survived, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's an important scene, and they get out of there. But then there's this massive chase scene in the streets of Bucharest, like in the tunnels and the expressways, and they're on the roof.
Getting ahead to Larry. Once Bucky gets out of the building where his apartment is, then he runs into Black Panther.
Right on the roof.
On the roof.
Right.
And then that's what leads to the chase through the streets of Bucharest.
Right.
Because Black Panther doesn't know. Well, Black Panther thinks that Bucky is still responsible for his father's death.
Correct.
And it says nobody's figured it out yet. Everybody still thinks that Bucky did it.
Right. Even Captain America. Even Captain America believes that. Right. But he wants to bring his friend in because he wants to protect him. Right. But then Black Panther shows up on the.
Captain America assumes that, like you said, that he, that that Bucky did it while he was, you know, under
the trance. Mind control. Right, exactly. Right. So he's absolving him of that sin, so to speak. Right. Black Panther doesn't care. His father's dead. He wants revenge, and he literally jumps down off, you know, on this rooftop. And again, all hell breaks loose. Is now Black Panther's fighting with Bucky. Black mm-hmm. Widow's there, mm-hmm. right? Captain America's there. I mean, we just got you know, we're in a tornado of fighting
and
going.
And their authorities are breathing down their neck.
Isn't Falcon? Falcon's there too. I mean, just you have a mishmash of people, and right, and all of a sudden it gets to the streets of Bucharest. And there's cars,
surrounded.
Cops surrounded. Black Panther, they're on motorcycles. Right. Bucky's trying to escape. I mean, they're every which way but loose in this scene in Bucharest.
And they get
there's a great sequence when Bucky comes up to a guy on a moving motorcycle, knocks him off, and then turns the motorcycle around and starts riding on it.
Right, and riding
without
the other,
breaking the momentum.
Right, and riding in the other direction. And so, you know, Falcon's assisting, Black Panther's hunting him down, you know, Captain's and, you know, Captain America's in this SUV.
You know, it gets to the point where they have to, like, surrender themselves because they're surrounded by
They do eventually surrender, right? And Black Panther takes off his mask to reveal who it is. Mm-hmm. And I think even Captain America says, "Your Highness."
Yeah.
You know, and so there's Captain America.
Well, also Rhodey shows up. Rhodey shows up
with
the police.
That's right.
And basically, he says, "Well, Cap, you're a criminal now."
Yes. Right. And so everybody's arrested. Everybody's taken into custody.
Right. Black Panther, Captain America, Falcon.
Well, Black Panther is able to probably scream diplomatic immunity.
Right, but he's initially arrested.
Yes.
And so is Captain America. So is Falcon. And so is Bucky. They're all
Winter
arrested.
Soldier.
Yes. So they lock Winter Soldier up into a special cage.
And this is where the CIA agent, right? Where the CIA agent comes into play.
Yes.
No. This is where Zemo shows up.
Right. Zemo shows up.
We've seen a couple of scenes with Zemo earlier in the film where he's trying to track down Winter Soldier, and he tracks down basically Winter Soldier's handler.
Yes.
And then tortures him, and he's asking him about. He's about a mission report from December 16th, 1991.
Right. Mission report.
Which we don't make the connection yet.
No.
But it's from the beginning of the film.
Right. But
and he mentions that he got all the information because of after S.H.I.E.L.D. fell, Black Widow put all of Hydra's information out on the web, just did an information dump.
Right.
But he says a lot of it was encrypted. But he knew how to analyze it and unencrypt it, or de-encrypt it.
So he got the information he was looking for because Zemo was impacted by
Sokovia. Right.
We find that out a little bit later in the film. But yeah, he was impacted by Sokovia as well.
So Zemo it wants to break out Winter Soldier. He wants
to stir the pot, or you know, like he mentions later on in the film. He says that you don't want to destroy a country from without. You want to allow it to destroy itself from within.
And that's a very chilling statement I saw recently.
Especially today's stuff.
Well, again, because that's kind of a parallel to what Russia feels, how Vladimir Putin, I believe, feels. Well, it's been stated that he feels that the greatest tragedy of the 20th century was the collapse of the Soviet Union.
Mm-hmm.
And so now it's Russia. It's no longer the Soviet Union. And so, of course, who was the archenemy of the Soviet Union was the United States of America.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can destroy the United States of America from within, mm-hmm. instead of fighting them on an external war, you can just sit back and, you know, pop the popcorn and watch them eat each other alive.
And that's what Zemo's trying to do.
Right. Pit the Avengers against each other.
He found the notebook with all the commands.
With the trigger words.
He sets them off, and he's doing it slowly, and Bucky realizes what's going on. He's like, don't finish this. Don't, you know, stop.
Right, but he does.
He does, and the power to the building gets taken out by an EMT.
Right. Well, and see, Zemo was there because he's pretending to be a
psychologist. He's pretending to do a mental health test, which Zemo, they find a little bit later, Zemo kills the guy that was supposed to be there at the airport.
Right.
So now
Bucky is flipping out.
Right.
He's out of his cage.
Right.
So Cap comes into the area. He sees all the guards like destroyed on the floor, but he sees Zemo in there, and he grabs him. He says, "What is it that you want?" And Zemo tells him, "I want to see an empire fall."
Right. And so, right.
Which is he's basically saying that about the Avengers. Yeah.
Right. Pretty much. Right. Yeah. Exactly. He wants to destroy them.
And so, Bucky is beating the snot out of everybody. He almost kills Agent 13.
Right.
He takes out everybody, and Tony's there, but Tony is not in.
He's not in the Iron Man suit. He doesn't have it with him.
No, he has
like a hand, like a little portable thing.
He's got a portable device. Did you know that this scene was not in the original script, and Robert Downey Jr. insisted on this? He came to the director, which I forgot who
it was.
The Russo brothers. And he says, "I got this great idea I want in the film." And he described this foldable glove thing, and they said, we just don't get it. And he kept on harping at them until they caved, and they said, "We'll go ahead and put it in there."
Okay.
And so that scene, because he has almost like an Iron Man foldable glove thing that he uses to try to take down the Winter Soldier, and the Winter Soldier's got a gun, and he manages to get his mechanical hand over the pistol of the barrel of the gun right as it goes off. And if that didn't happen, he would have been killed.
Okay.
And that scene was written by Robert Downey Jr.
Interesting. Okay. To highlight the technology, just to highlight.
Well, he said that I think.
I think he just wanted to be in the action, right?
For whatever reason, I think it was very logical and it worked, and it didn't take away from anything, and it probably enhanced it because it shows you how far Bucky was gone because he didn't question it. He pulled the trigger without hesitation.
Right. I mean, Bucky was in that trance. Right. He was the ultimate height. He was the Winter Soldier again. And those words.
Yeah, and
it's like a flipping a switch for him.
Yeah, and so if Tony had not had that little device that he smuggled into this SHIELD headquarters thing, he would have been dead. Yeah. So it just said Tony was going against the grain again, and Winter Soldier was completely entrenched and was doing things without questioning.
Okay, so we got to keep moving because
this
is crucial. So the Winter Soldier
running out of time.
Right, but we haven't gotten to the big fight scene.
Which is the best thing in the world!
The big fight scene.
There's the big fight scene, and then there's the other fight scene after that. So.
The sad fight scene.
Anyway, the point...
So Cap gets Bucky out of there.
Right.
And he and Sam have him, which, by the way, the scene where they show Falcon and Cap with Bucky is the same thing from the after credits scene in Ant-Man.
Right, it's correct me if I'm wrong, those end credit scenes are not always in the movies, actually. I mean,
they're hinting at upcoming things, necessarily mean that they're going to be in it.
Right. This is literally word for word.
Almost. Yes.
So basically, they find out from Bucky that Zemo was the one who set up the explosion in Vienna.
Right.
And what he wanted from Bucky was that Bucky tells him that there were five other Winter Soldiers. And that he wanted to find out where the base was, which is what we saw at the very beginning of the movie, where Bucky was getting his command.
Correct. The same place.
So they go to the airport because they know where Zima's going.
Right.
So
they need to get there. They need to get there.
So that's the only place they have is a Quinjet that's hidden there.
Right. In a hangar in the back.
Yes. Yeah. And they said, "We'll go there. We'll go to Zemo. We'll stop him from getting these other soldiers," because they're thinking like, "Well, he's going to activate these other soldiers
that's a true problem. No question about it."
Yeah.
Now, remember, a little backtrack is, you know, Falcon says, "You know, well, you know, we might need some help on this." Is it? Well, you know, I got a guy. Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
And then also
Tony, when he's back at the base with Roth, he says that he has somebody he's going to go get for help. And that's where they show him go to Queen.
Right.
And he meets with Aunt May and Peter Parker.
Now, am I crazy? I just saw this the other day. They show a sequence when Tony meets Aunt May, and he goes in there and talks to Peter Parker.
Well, he talks to Aunt May, so he's already there. Peter Parker walks into the apartment, and Tony's already there because the car's out front.
Yes, there's a crazy car out there. But when I saw this in the theater, I don't remember the sequence. Only thing I remember.
No, it was in the theater.
No, it was there. It was there.
Because the only thing I remember is when he swings into action at the airport, and I'm like, holy crap, it's Spider-Man.
Let's put it this way.
No, they set it up.
I remember seeing Marissa Tomei. I'm like, ha. You know.
That's going against the grain too, because in the comic books, Aunt May is a frail, very old woman, and this one, it's like, why does Aunt May have to be old?
Yeah, well, she isn't, and she's very good looking. And so Tony's,
and then Tony even makes the comment, like, can't you believe you're somebody's aunt? And she says, well, we come in all different. Shapes and sizes
and ages, right.
All
different types. Tony's schmoozing her, almost basically hitting on her.
Oh yeah,
big
time.
And then Peter walks in.
What was that? The walnut, hazelnut bread or something.
Right, Peter walks in.
But then when Peter walks in, he says, Tony tells him, he says, "Oh, remember, I've been reading your emails," and he starts winking at him.
Yeah,
he's basically under the. The pretense that he's there to give Peter funding for some kind of project or something like that.
Well, like that because the MIT award.
Right.
So he says, you got my email about your award, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And he goes, what?
So really, he's figured out that Peter is Spider-Man and wants to recruit him to bring him to Germany for this big showdown.
And then he goes in the bedroom and he finds his hidden costume, which was really poorly hidden. He's like, you see through these? Right. And he's like, he's tearing his costume apart, and he goes, you know, he says, you need an upgrade.
Right.
And so,
he's hinting, look, I can help you with
an
upgrade.
Do this. Yeah, he's but always, I need you to Tony's do always trying to fix something.
Right, but he's like, but I need you to do something for me first. Yes. Do you have a passport? No. He says, that's okay.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But he can't tell Aunt May. He says, okay.
And he says, you know, you need to come with me. He says, I can't just go out of school for no apparent reason.
I have homework to do. He's like,
He says, I didn't hear that. You know, and so he leaves Tony leaves with the idea that, okay, I got to fix Spider-Man.
Right, exactly. We'll get a new suit. So, of course, he does recruit Spider-Man, as you're saying, Ethan. And so now we have the two sides. You know, we have the two factions. And the two new additions to the team. So we have, Captain America, Falcon, Scarlet Witch, and we now also have Ant-Man.
I counted them because they show a scene where they're kind of like they're facing off.
Yeah.
So there's six of them. There's six of them on each side. It's a total of 12.
Right.
So on the one side you have Captain America, Falcon, Winter Soldier, Ant-Man, Hawkeye, and Scarlet Witch.
Yes.
Right.
And then on the other side you have Iron Man,
War Machine,
Black Widow, Vision, Black Panther,
and
I'm missing somebody. And Spider-Man.
Spider-Man. Right. Which is really funny is that all the hardware is on one side.
There is no Hulk. Hulk is not in this battle.
No. But you know, everybody that's mechanical or is all the hardware is on one side. So I feel like this is very uneven odds.
Well, you think it is at first, but again,
Falcon has hardware, and he's on Captain America.
Has some hardware, but again, after seeing Ant-Man, which we discussed and we had in a podcast as well, previous podcast, Ant-Man's very important to this battle.
But this is the first time that we've seen him do something that he hadn't done before.
Right. We see him jumping around, shrinking, beating up people, being a Black Widow, beating up Tony, going into Tony's Iron Man outfit and shorting things.
Which was a playoff of the comic books when he gets trapped in his own armor and Iron Man has to go in there and short it out so it could be open.
So.
But he does something which was devastatingly awesome, which is he goes from being Ant-Man to
Giant Man.
Giant Man, yes.
Right.
And that was something they tried very hard to hide before the film came out.
Very
much. Unfortunately, there were some toys that were released that were labeled as Giant Man, including a Funko Pop, a Giant Man Funko Pop.
Okay. Yes, I have that one. And it just, yeah. And so, yes, that was done months before the movie came out. So everybody, so that just kind of, it didn't ruin it, but it was like, it was just like, even with the Lego sets, you know, Lego sets are so famous for coming out weeks before a Marvel movie, and it gives away a lot of crap. This time around, I really haven't seen anything about Endgame. So good for them.
I think they're playing it close. I think they're playing it close.
They've learned their lesson.
Yeah.
So so we get to see Giant Man, which was totally awesome. He's throwing planes around,
right, buses, everything.
Just and there is a very interesting piece on this tarmac that a lot of people overlooked. There is a prop from a TV show. Did anybody catch it?
Missed it. No.
No.
What is it?
Arrested Development's car, you know, the staircase platform car. It's in the background.
Really?
Yes, and they purposely they purposely put it in there, and they admitted that it is the Arrested Development car.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah.
I wanted to I didn't see that at all.
I saw I didn't see it the first few times I saw it, and then this latest time I made a point to look for it. I'm like, damn, it is there.
That's crazy. Well, now, of course,
another thing they did with Ant-Man that was right out of the comics was there's one shot where Hawkeye is drawing back an arrow, and Ant-Man is sitting on the point of the arrow, and he basically shoots Ant-Man into the fray. And that was something that was taken directly from an Avengers comic.
Yes, so, it's a very famous Avenger comic cover. Yeah, so it's just end storyline. So,
okay. Well, of course, I'll give you. So, go ahead, Ethan. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, overall, this is a huge battle scene. Like I said, you've got, you think about it, the original Avengers movie had 6 superheroes in it. Here you've got 12, and they're fighting each other. So it's a pretty big fight scene. It's, of course, the first time we see Spider-Man in action in an MCU film, which, by the way, for my money, Tom Holland has done the best job of portraying Spider-Man of any of the actors who've done it so far.
This is so much from the comic books. You can almost hear the pages turning.
So much like the Spider-Man in the comics. With the comments, the little wisecracks and what have you. It's just perfect.
It is. So much so, here's what I was going
to
say.
And he's young.
Right.
He's not like a 30-year-old pretending to be a teenager.
Right. I mean, he looks young. He's not as as tall as maybe as the previous actors were. I mean, he really fits the bill of what
He's not old and wrinkly.
Right, exactly. So I'll give you the tie-in, of course, as he's slinging the webs, on the thing, he's like, hey, guys, you ever heard of this movie called Empire Strikes Back? And, and he has the Star Wars reference, and he says, that thing, where they're wrapping the things around.
Maybe how young is this guy?
Right. They're making quips about him. He's like, maybe we should try that.
He says that old movie, right?
That very old sci-fi movie.
And of course, I'm groaning, too. But then,
granted, it is almost 40 years ago.
It is almost, but that's not the point. The point is, Mr. Spider-Man had a good point. To take down Giant Man, you go for the legs, right? With the AT-AT walkers. Right.
And I liked it when he was fighting Winter Soldier. He throws a enormous punch, and Spider-Man catches it, this mechanical punch, and goes, wow, this is so cool. You have a mechanical arm.
Right.
And it's just like he's stopped in the middle of battle, and Winter Soldier's looking at him like,
How this kid stop this?
You're like, well, that too. And he's like, well, we're fighting.
Right.
And then when he's fighting Captain America, and Captain America knocks this huge piece of the airport onto him, and Spider-Man's holding it up, and he goes, well, who are you from? And he goes, I'm from Queens. And Captain America laughs and goes, I'm from Brooklyn, and runs away.
Right, exactly. Yeah, Brooklyn. Yeah. And he goes, right. So a little New York rivalry.
And
of course, the very first action we see from Spider-Man is when they're facing off, he jumps in and snatches Captain America's shield away from him using his web. So that's how we're introduced to his character in the film.
And a very interesting significant part is they pull something from the cartoons, which is they make his...
Oh, the eyes blinking.
Yes, his eyes change shape. Spider-Man's eyes change shape like in the cartoons because, he's got a mask on, so they had to portray him having emotions and things like that. So they did it by having his eyes change shape.
Really?
Okay. And so they pulled that right for it. But you hear, because it's mechanical.
Okay. Like the 1960s Spider-Man cartoon.
Yes.
Right?
Mm.
So if we could, I know we got to keep things moving. So what winds up happening is Captain America and Winter Soldier are trying to get to a plane to be able to chase after Zemo, and Black Panther is in the way of trying to stop them, but Black Widow actually intervenes and prevents Black Panther from stopping them. Right. They take off in the plane, and War Machine flies up and tries to stop the plane, and Vision shoots out a blast, which winds up hitting War Machine.
Right.
It knocks out his reactor core, and he winds up his arc reactor, and he winds up crashing to the ground and getting injured.
Very badly
severely injured. Severely injured, right.
Severely
spinal
injured,
injury. Yeah. Spinal injury, right. Is Tony and Captain America try to rescue him, right?
Tony and
Falcon.
I thought it was Tony and Vision.
Maybe
Tony, Vision, and Falcon. All
right,
they try
to stop him from hitting the ground from impact, but they don't.
No, they don't. The suit's the only thing that saved him from being killed, even though it was basically had no power.
Right.
And another thing that Spider-Man says is about Captain America's shield, because as he's fighting, he gets it back, and he goes like, this thing doesn't obey the laws of physics at all.
Right, right.
So
says that.
Yeah,
right.
The quips
from Spider-Man, right?
Yeah,
like a teenager, like a teenager.
But everybody's argued about the shield anyway. But so Rhodey is badly hurt. Ant-Man, Falcon. And Hawkeye are all arrested.
Right.
They're taken
and they're put on this floating prison.
Right, yes. Right. Black Widow too.
Scarlet Witch.
Scarlet Witch.
I'm sorry. Scarlet Witch is in the prison. Right.
Yes.
Right. So they're arrested in this Supermax prison. Floating on the water.
In the comic books that was designed by Reed Richards of the Fantastic Four.
Okay. So.
Yeah. So Captain America and Bucky go to the base, the Hydra base,
in Siberia,
to try to stop Zemo, because Zemo is trying to get to the other Winter Soldiers, which are cryogenically frozen there at the base.
Right.
Yeah, and
Tony gets in the Iron Man suit to go after them, and as we see them flying by, we also see the Wakandan jet with Black Panther.
Right, right.
So all of them are converging on this plate.
Right, Black Panther's like flying like in like the clouds, or like a fog behind him, so he can't be detected. But he's following Tony in the Iron Man suit. Yeah.
Which is interesting is how high tech the Iron Man suit is, the stealth technology that Wakanda has
is better.
Slightly better in that point.
Right.
So they get to the base, and they're like, holy crap, he got in. So they go in there thinking like, we can stop, we can still stop him. And they find out that he didn't reactivate those.
He killed them.
He killed them all.
Right.
Because
right.
We find out later that that the car accident and what he pulled out of the trunk was 5 bags of the super soldier formula,
right?
That was that Tony's dad was carrying,
right?
Howard Stark, because he was taking it to the Pentagon or
someplace, yeah.
But that's what was used to create all these additional Winter Soldier.
Correct.
And they were bonkers and nuts because they didn't use the Zeta beams, because that's part of the problem, is that you needed the full formula or it's just not going to work. Because look at Red Skull, because he was the first one, that went wrong.
Right, right.
Captain America went right, and then you got these 5 guys that went wrong because they didn't use the proper technique.
Right, we skipped over a scene. There's a scene that shows Bucky training / fighting with these Winter Soldiers
and being defeated,
and they're going, like I said, they're going bonkers. They can't control themselves.
Right,
and they
showed that in a flashback when Bucky was explaining to Captain America and Falcon about.
What's going on?
That there were other Winter Soldiers.
So Bucky and Captain America are at the Siberian base.
There was one scene I wanted to bring up. When Bucky first escapes from the S.H.I.E.L.D. headquarters, he's fighting with Black Widow, and she goes, "You don't remember me, do you?"
Right. She does. Right. She does say that. And if I remember properly, somewhere I think in this scene, the Siberian scene that we're talking about now at the end. Remember, Captain America and Bucky are walking around trying to find Zemo, and so Bucky goes to get a rifle. And I noticed this.
when he opens the drawer to get the munitions, on the side of the drawer it says Romanoff.
Are you sure about that?
I did see that. Yes. Yeah.
It's. I'm gonna have to play that back.
Yeah. It says Romanoff, so he's fishing out the rifle from Black Widow's her stash.
Because in the comic books, and I don't know if they have brought it up in the movies or not, she is extremely old. You know, she's from the 40s. Right. It's just that she has had her age retarded or frozen.
Okay.
So that's, you know, she's as old as Nick Fury, the original Nick Fury in the comic books.
So you check that on me.
Listeners, I will double check that.
Listeners, check on that and tweet us. But here's the scene. So Bucky and Captain America are looking for him. Bucky gets out a gun, and they're like walking, trying to find him, clearing the area. And, of course,
Iron Man shows up.
Iron Man shows up.
And then Zemo, because like he wanted this to happen.
Right, and he goes, look, I have something to show you. I have this report. And then he shows the video to everybody.
The complete video.
It's a VCR tape with the date 16 December 1991 in Russian.
Right, and it's showing, and the Bucky's watching it, Captain America's watching it, Tony Stark's watching it all together.
And we see that Bucky actually, the two people in the car were Howard and Martha Stark.
Right, Tony Stark's parents.
No, it wasn't Martha. What's her name?
Okay, does it, right. Mrs. Stark.
Either way, it's the Howard Stark and Mrs. Stark.
Right, and he kills them both, right, and takes the formula out of the trunk, and then, you know, Tony turns to Cap and goes like, did you know about this? I need to know. Did you know about this? And Cap finally caves in and says, I knew about it. I just didn't know it was him at the time.
Right.
And because he had a suspicion, and this confirms it.
So Tony is now – so, I mean, again, as I said,
the rift between the two of them is now a chasm.
Worse, right? It's worse. And so this is basically a vengeance movie. I mean, this entire movie – forget it, it's called Civil War. This entire movie is really about Bucky and Tony Stark. That's all this movie is about, is what Bucky did to Tony Stark's parents. And Captain America's in the middle.
And so, so Tony now is seeing red. He wants blood. He wants to...
He doesn't care. Forget Black Panther. He wants to kill him.
He doesn't care happened, or he's being brainwashed. He wants him dead.
Right. It's his parents.
So he winds up... There's a big battle royale between Iron Man going against Captain America and Winter Soldier.
Right.
As a result of the battle, Iron Man destroys Winter Soldier's mechanical arm.
Right.
Captain America shoves his shield through Tony's arc reactor to shut down his suit. And then at the end of it, he winds up leaving the shield behind.
Right.
Because doesn't Tony say something about that was...
No,
my father's shield, or something like that.
He says, you don't deserve that shield. My dad made that shield.
Right.
And so he throws it down.
He leaves it. Yeah.
Right. And meanwhile, outside of the base, Zemo is there, and Black Panther sneaks up on him, ready to kill Zemo. But then after talking with him, he decides not to.
Right.
And instead to have Zemo be brought in as a prisoner.
Now, he finds out the reason why Zemo wanted revenge or to attack the Avengers is because his family escaped the city.
Right, they were in the suburbs. Sokovia, right.
But when the city collapsed, the debris took them out.
Right. So he's out for vengeance himself. Yes. Zemo, this is all about vengeance.
Yeah, so that's the only thing is that he knows that he even said it. He says, I'm not powerful enough to destroy them. More powerful people have tried. I want to see them destroyed. He wants to break them apart, and he basically succeeded.
Yeah, I mean, really, I mean, exactly. Yep, yeah. He's pitted everybody. I mean, almost everybody against.
So the whole terror team is completely dismantled, and so Black Panther goes like, okay, I can't kill you because now I understand.
Right.
I pity you, and so therefore you need to be brought in for your crimes. I'm not going to kill you. And
he was brought in. He was put in that chamber.
Chamber. And so now we have a broken team. Zemo is locked up.
Yes, arrested, locked up.
And then we see Tony go back to Avengers headquarters, and he has. And Rhodey is there, who's been fitted with some mechanical exoskeleton on his legs, enabling him to walk.
Right, and Tony's helping him.
And then,
yeah,
yeah,
And then a FedEx package arrives, delivered by Stan Lee. So there's the Stan Lee cameo. Yes. And in it is a small flip phone, which includes a voicemail message to him from Captain America.
And the note basically says, like, we've had our differences. I understand where you're coming from. You got to understand where I'm coming from. We have a rift. I know it can be solved, but if you ever need me, call me. And that's what the phone was for.
Right.
Which we see again in Infinity War.
Yes.
We see the same phone again.
Correct.
So then we see, as we're hearing the voiceover, we see the floating jail cell with all the guards knocked out on the floor. Faust is looking out of his cell, and he sees a shadow approaching him, and the shadow is Steve Rogers there.
Yeah,
the
free out of costume.
Falcon, as well as Ant-Man and Hawkeye and, and Scarlet Witch.
So basically, they bust him out of this prison, so now everybody's free, but on the run.
Correct.
Right, so we go to credits, and then we get a mid-credit scene, which is in Wakanda, so it's our first time seeing Wakanda.
Right.
And basically, Steve has taken Bucky to Wakanda to try to get him fixed. Bucky agrees to, or decides that he wants to be returned to a cryogenic state until they can figure out how to unscramble his brain. And we see, Steve and Falcon talking with T'Challa in Wakanda.
Yes, which is the first time we ever seen this, which is hinting of things to come.
Right.
And so
exactly. And then there's another scene at I can't remember, is it mid credits again or at the end of the credits?
The end of the credits.
And, yeah.
This is back in Queens, New York, and this is where they show Peter Parker back in his room, and he's talking to Aunt May, and he's nursing a black eye, and she comes in with an ice bag wrapped in a hand towel, and he goes, who beat you up? And he goes, oh, there's some guy named Steve. She goes, and she's like naming all these people that I guess hangs with Peter Parker. He's no, you don't know him. And he says,
He's
from Brooklyn. Right. And there was this other guy, this really big guy. So Ant-Man. And so he says, and so she ices him up and she leaves, and he's messing with his new web shooter, which apparently is an upgrade by Tony Stark, and he accidentally sets it off, and he's seeing the menu program that's being projected on the ceiling. It's the logo
shape of the spider signal,
which is it's from the cartoon series, because he had a spider signal, and then around it you see all the commands or all the menu selections, and I tried for the life of me to freeze frame that so I'm able to pull it. Somebody did that on the web. They actually pulled it down and actually was able to list a lot of the things that were on there.
Okay, well I couldn't catch all that, but okay.
All right,
and
so,
that's it.
It's pretty a dense movie, because it's dealing with a lot of stuff about the impact that superheroes can be on the world, how the world sees these superheroes, and the internal conflict of those two point of views on the heroes themselves,
plus the history of what happened to the Starks.
Yes.
And
the reasoning why Tony is the way he is.
Exactly. And again, there's a lot of vengeance floating around this movie, from the Sokovia and Zemo, then Tony against Winter Soldier. There's a lot of anger with these superheroes, and it ends kind of hanging. It's kind of like a hanging movie, because now what? Now what happens?
Well, yeah, they're broken up, and it's just like Captain America is no longer Captain America.
Right.
He threw the shield down. He walked away from it. You see him out of costume.
Right, with no shield. Right, no costume. Shield, right, breaking.
Yeah.
His
so it's
up.
Just a, so now the everybody's scattered to the winds, and what happens to them?
How do we pick up the pieces?
Yes.
And this really sets up four of the upcoming movies. So of course, we've been introduced to Black Panther, which sets up the Black Panther film. Mm-hmm. We've introduced Spider-Man, and that sets up Spider-Man Homecoming, as well as Homecoming has some references back to the incidents in this film.
Yes.
It sets up Infinity War, because we have the division between the two camps with Cap and Tony, and Tony not wanting to reach out to Cap because of his of the chasm that's formed between them. Mm-hmm. And then it also sets up the Ant-Man sequel because Scott Lang is on house arrest because of his activity with violating the Sokovia Accords.
Right. Yes. The one thing it doesn't do is it doesn't set up the next movie in the MCU series, which is Doctor Strange.
But it is mentioned.
Okay, where was it?
When next week's podcast, when Doctor Strange is still a doctor and he's driving his car very quickly down the highway, and he goes, I need a new case, and he's talking to his assistant over the phone, and the assistant is rattling off all these cases, and he rattles off this. He says, I have a pilot with a back injury.
Yes. So I guess they tried to. Yeah, that's right. I did see that again last night. Right. So I guess they referred Rhodey's injury to Doctor Strange, but he turned it down.
Yes, he goes, no. He says, that's not spectacular enough
for me. Right. So there is a connection, a very thin connection. But again, yeah.
Well, it shows you when Doctor Strange takes place then. It happens after this,
Shortly after. Exactly.
Yeah, a few weeks after this. Far enough along for Tony to build the exoskeleton and have him starting to use it, and he's able to start working with it.
Right.
Also enough for him to be diagnosed because his shattered vertebrae were S7 through S4 through
It's in the it's in Doctor Strange, right?
Yeah, and so it was far enough along so that it is done in there, and it shows you that Doctor Strange is in chronological order.
Correct. Still put in chronological order. Yeah. So that is Captain America Civil War or Avengers 2.5.
Yep. Yes. And that was 12 characters.
Yes.
Now,
No Hulk,
but in Endgame.
And No Thor.
That's right. And in Endgame, there's supposedly 63 characters.
In Endgame.
Yeah.
In Endgame.
Oh, jeez. Okay.
All right. So is this going to be a buy, a stream, or a skip it?
At least the stream. Stream minimum.
I would say a buy. I think it's one of the better ones.
I'm gonna have to say a buy.
It sets up so much of the other movies, like Ethan said. So yeah. you have to watch this to understand the plot lines or setups for these other movies.
The characters' motivations.
Plus, I thought that the action sequences were great,
insanely good.
They did in Winter Soldier. I think the Russo brothers bring like a kinetic energy to the fight scenes.
Yeah, it's almost a ballet because everything is so fluid in their fight battles. There's no lost movement.
I still prefer Winter Soldier. I think Winter Soldier is a better movie. But that
out of the three Captain Americas. Name and more order.
2-1-3.
Ooh, I go 2-3-1.
I would go 2-3-1.
Yeah, 2-3-1 for me.
Yeah, no, I'm 2-1-3.
All right.
But there you go.
All right.
Tell us what you think, listeners.
Yes, please.
Rate your Captain America movies.
Yes, and you can rate this podcast on iTunes or any place that you listen to your podcast. In fact, you can do that on our website at geekculture.online. You can go to us on most social media at like Facebook and Instagram at geekcultureonline. You can go to our Twitter, which is our favorite, at
Your Geek Culture. Your Geek Culture.
Send us a tweet.
Yes. And you could write to all three of us at Patrick at geekculture.online, at Larry at geekculture.online, and Ethan at geekculture.online. And we want you to please write to us, rate, review, and subscribe. And we will see you next week with Doctor Strange.
Have a good one. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.